Narayani joins Srila Prabhupada's movement in 1970 in Boston, and there she was serving for some time as eventually as pujari, when the letter from Srila Prabhupada came requesting people to come to India for the month of Kartik in 1972. So along with her husband at the time, Purnaprajna Prabhu, some of you may know him through his books that he is selling out in the courtyard at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, they came to India and she joined us here at Radha Damodar. So she will also be giving some first-hand memories of that historic occasion. I just had a few notes, otherwise I tend to space out. Yeah. Initially, only Gurudas and Jamuna and Subal were here. Just a few. Maybe Mahendra, who was one Bengali devotee. Not so many devotees were remaining in Vrindavan. But the word was getting out a little slowly because we didn't have the faxes, we didn't have the emails, by Krishna's mercy. And making a phone call in those days from India to America was prohibitive. You just could not afford it, and usually it didn't work anyway. When Srila Radhanath Maharaj was describing the simplicity of Vrindavan in 71 when he came here, imagine in even earlier than that point. In 1963, Srila Prabhupada told us, this was the year that electricity arrived in Vrindavan. So electricity had only been here for under 10 years, and most of the time, it wasn't here. In other words, it just didn't work. Just like they would have the water running for only certain hours of the day, the electricity would also only work certain hours of the day. So it was very sweet. There wasn't so much sound pollution and other types of physical pollution going on. And where Ramanreti is now such a built-up metropolis, there was nothing, just fields. When we were first building Krishna Balaram Mandir, and we would come to visit, there was no guest house. There wasn't even a little shack to stay. So sometimes myself, my daughter, and a few other ladies, we'd walk across the street. There was simply a field, a farmer's field, and we'd sleep in the field for the night. And then we'd find one water pump, and we'd take our bath in the darkness of the morning before anybody could see what we were doing. You know, so it was quite simple. So Prabhupada wanted to have this wonderful festival here. And we heard from Shruti Kirti on the first day of the yatra how much Srila Prabhupada was looking forward to coming to Vrindavan and meeting his Western disciples. That he would comment on it as they were in Hong Kong. They commented on it when he was on the plane traveling. It was something that he felt very close to, being reunited with his Western disciples here in Vrindavan. Jamuna had a small room at Sharaf Bhavan. And when I spoke the other day, I couldn't remember the name of the place. I was thinking Ananda Bhavan. Actually, it was Sharaf Bhavan. And she had a small room. And the rest of the devotees, the handful who were men, they were staying on the construction site at Krishna Balaram Mandir. And then they moved over here, Jamuna and Gurudas, to prepare the rooms for Srila Prabhupada. So at that point in time, the rooms and even this courtyard were quite unkept. The rooms had been more or less unused since Prabhupada's departure. And from our point of view, sometimes it appears as if there's a little irreverence in the way things are treated. You know, we're coming, we're making obeisances, we're trying to think of some prayers, we're cleaning, and people were just very casual, and they were throwing garbage in the rooms. And this area where we're sitting now, it had more trees in it, but it also had beautiful dust of Vrindavan. There wasn't all this, the tiles of marble and cement. But the samadhis were in somewhat of a state of disrepair, and there was no illumination. The electricity that had come to Vrindavan in 63 hadn't reached this area yet. So Jamuna, realizing that Srila Prabhupada would soon be arriving, along with hopefully 50, we thought that was a big number then. I mean, really, it's, you know, we were thinking 50 disciples, and, you know, from US and Europe. What an accomplishment, what an achievement. Sometimes when I'm looking at Maharaja's yatras and I'm thinking, what an offering to Srila Prabhupada, you know. And I remember one of the first ones that I went on, it was in Mayapur, and there was 300, this was in the early 90s, there were 350 devotees, and we thought that was just incredible. But it is incredible, because every year there's a multiplication going on, and every one of you is being offered to Srila Prabhupada and being given the opportunity to personally serve him and hear his glories through these yatras. So Jamuna was seeing that the situation needed some attention. And one of the first arrivals was another dear God sister, who at the time was a little bit older than most of us. She was 28 years old. And Jamuna was more or less about that age, a little bit younger, but she arrived, this young woman, but older than us, from England. And she had bumped into the devotees on Oxford Street. She was a secretary, and she was on her noon break. And a Hari Nam party came along and persuaded her to take a book. So she read this book, she read about Vrindavan, and then she met the devotees again, and they told her about this festival, and she quit her job and came here. She had never spent even one night in the temple. She didn't know who Rupa Goswami was. She didn't know who Jiva Goswami was. She hadn't even met Srila Prabhupada. But she came here, and she found out where this place was, and she went to Jamuna, and she said, I've come. I want to do some service. And Jamuna pointed to this courtyard here, and she said, please clean it up. And so there was, you know, fallen trees and bricks and just all kinds of trashy items. And there weren't any plastic bags in those days. That was one of the nice things. So it was organic trash. So she started doing that. And then Jamuna asked her to paint the doors of the samadhis. She didn't know what a samadhi was. She did not know what a bhajan kutir was. She still didn't know who Srila Rupa Goswami was. And she thought the reason she was being asked to paint the door of the samadhi was because Srila Prabhupada was coming, and, you know, she was doing it for Prabhupada. It actually wasn't until quite a great deal of time later that she realized that she'd had the opportunity to render personal service to Rupa Goswami. And Jamuna managed to get enough electrical wire to bring out one little light bulb. And in some of the pictures from that time, or at least in the videos, you'll see Srila Prabhupada is sitting about maybe where the table now has been moved. And there's one little light bulb with not a lot of power. And even whatever power that one little light bulb could produce, it would get brighter and dimmer throughout the... And sometimes it would get so dim it didn't exist. We'd turn on our torches. She also asked this devotee, who later became known as Ganga Mayi, and she's still active in ISKCON, by the way. So she asked her, when she finished the doors, to come into Prabhupada's room. And Jamuna had very carefully written the Maha Mantra all the way around the top of the ceiling, or not the ceiling, but the top of the wall, just below the ceiling. So if you can look behind you and to your sides, you'll see this, you know, script going around. So she had seen like that. She was inspired to do the same thing in Prabhupada's room. And I haven't been in there on this trip, but at least last time that was still the feature of the room, that the Maha Mantra was around the room. So little by little, there was devotees began to also arrive. And the rooms here, as you see for Prabhupada, were very small, and then there were two other rooms up on the roof. There had been an arrangement that another room, which is in the back here, and has a doorway out to this, you can see the doorway is there, the windows are there, and it would have its own bath. And that was arranged, that room would be given to Srila Prabhupada. The exact night before Srila Prabhupada was going to arrive, in one of the mystical ways that things happen in Vrindavan that you can't ever really explain, the illustrious Goswamis of the temple decided not to give it to Prabhupada. They took it back from the devotees. So then Prabhupada's rooms, the room as it is standing now, he went into that room. And some of his entourage was staying in the upstairs on the roof. And the entourage, meaning his servant Shamsundar, his secretary Shruti Kirti, and Prajumna Prabhu, the Sanskrit editor, as well as a couple of sannyasis and Hairagriva Prabhu. When the day of Srila Prabhupada arrived, a simple cushion was put on the little veranda in between the two rooms as they now exist. And Srila Prabhupada sat there next to Obi-Al Kapoor, just greeting his devotees. And one by one, each one of us who was there was allowed to go up and personally put a garland on Srila Prabhupada and make our obeisances, which in most cases was prostrated obeisances. And this includes both men and women. Everybody personally garlands Srila Prabhupada and threw ourselves at his lotus feet with great love and awe and reverence. And Srila Prabhupada was in a mood that was very, very warm, very happy, very content to be sitting there among us in his old home. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes in his brief autobiography about returning to one's home. And he's saying, when one returns home, they feel some content, some peacefulness. Oh, everything is all right. So Prabhupada was feeling, it appeared in that same way. He was so happy to be back in Vrindavan. And in spite of the great amount of trouble that our uneducated Western behavior would daily bring, he was very happy to be here with us. At one point during this greeting, when passing garlands and then kirtan was on, he stopped everything. He saw when Vaikunthanath Prabhu went up, he stopped to ask, "How are you? You look thin." Actually, he was a thin person anyway, so he was looking even thinner. And he said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I have malaria." So then Prabhupada very lovingly gave him some advice. And he would say, if you need anything, you come to me, you let me know. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada was always very caring about his devotees. He would express his concern. Daily, there was a Harinam party. Before we all arrived, there was four devotees who would go on that Harinam party. And now the Harinam party was growing and growing. And with the addition of a few sannyasis, there was an even growing excitement with the Harinam parties. And sometimes the sannyasis would use their dandas to kind of like push themselves up. They would be jumping and then, you know, like a pole vaulter, which like get themselves up higher and higher. But this party was very enthusiastic and went out every morning. Srila Prabhupada also personally taught this English devotee who was formerly a secretary how to clean his rooms. She was given the assignment to clean the rooms, so he came back from his walk. He took his walk along the banks of the Jamuna. So he came back and he goes, "You've cleaned the room?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Do you know how to clean?" And she didn't know what to say because she thought she had just cleaned the room, which must have meant she knew how to clean. But he asked her, do you know how to clean? And before she could answer, he called for a bucket of water and a cloth, and he personally went over the room she had just cleaned to show her, to demonstrate by his own example, how it is you should dip the rag in the bucket of water, wring it out, wipe the floor, dip it again, and then go over it for the second rinse. So, as more and more devotees appeared on the scene, that's when the shift to Kesi God occurred. So at this, I had come expecting to cook for Prabhupada, so I had my whole kitchen with me. But Jumuna expressed her desire to cook for Prabhupada, and it also seemed practical because she was living here. And on the other side of the situation was Kesi God was a little distance, and there was more and more devotees, and there needed to be someone to head up the cooking there. So I somehow became the practical person to head up cooking in Kesi God, although there wasn't anything practical about the situation. The place was extremely unclean and uncleanable. It just seems like if you tried to scrub something, it would fall apart. There was bats and rats freely intermingling. At night, sometimes in the corners where the lady slept, we couldn't even stand up straight because for sure you'd get a bat flying in your head. And then you would feel these little crawly furry things with long skinny tails at night running along your body. You know, even though we told, you know, that you didn't have to do anything to invite them. They were already there. We were the guest. They were the residents. The water was salty, which meant we couldn't use it for anything but bathing, and it only came in a trickle, so most of the devotees in the darkness of the morning would take bath in the Jamuna. Many, many dignitaries from Braj would come daily to greet Srila Prabhupada. And he kept a jar of a kind of a big jar of para in his room. So after everybody would come, and whoever it was, he would offer them para prasad. Now the group of devotees who lived on the roof, they would themselves like that example. So they would quite often help themselves to this jar of prasad. So Prabhupada would reach into the jar to offer someone some prasad, and the jar would be empty. Because the devotee men from the roof, they had discovered this. After about 2 weeks, Srila Prabhupada requested that he should go up on the roof. The reason was that the Goswami, he was a little hard of hearing. He was also a little blind. So two stories in that connection. One is that because he was a little hard of hearing, he always shouted, and so all night he was like we're having a conversation, but he'd be shouting at whoever he was talking to, and to increase the quality of sound, he had a radio, like we have these little transistor radios so that we can hear the wonderful words of Maharaj as the yatra goes on. So that's a nice way to use a radio, but he wasn't listening to Krishna Katha. He was listening to all kinds of interesting sounds, you know, like, and it was really loud because he couldn't hear so well. But Srila Prabhupada could hear perfectly well, a little too much. So after two weeks, he said, "Please move me up. I cannot take the," you know, because it interfered with his translating. He couldn't get proper rest. And then, he was moved up into the, I don't know if they're still there, if there were two rooms, and actually it was a nicer arrangement for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada would eat on the roof, honor his prasad on the roof, he'd have his massage on the roof. There's a couple pictures of him being massaged on the roof. and he would have his darshans up on the roof. And the rooms were larger, and then there was more space on the roof. And that way, the darshans were growing and were more comfortable. On another time, because he was getting a little blind, the same Goswami couldn't really see things so clearly. So he decided to offer some Mahaprasad to Srila Prabhupada, and it was Mahaprasad sweets. And he had a little tully with the sweets, and the sweets were covered with ants. They literally looked like they were crawling, but he couldn't see that. And he comes up and he goes, "Swamiji, Swamiji," in his kind of really loud voice, and he starts to bring it in, and Ganga Mai was there, and so he passes, "You give to Swamiji," and she could see perfectly well that it was covered with ants, so she didn't know what to do. Here was the Goswami of Radha Damodar telling her to give a plate full of ants to Srila Prabhupada, who was her spiritual master. Fortunately, Jamuna was on hand, and Jamuna could be very devotionally practical, so she said, "Just accept it and hide it." Well, that's what happened to that plate. There would also be small kind of home-style informal engagements for Prabhupada. People say, come my house, and occasionally he would accept, and a few of us would also go. So one engagement, which was a little bit larger than the others, there were some life members from Delhi that had come to Vrindavan to see Srila Prabhupada, and there were some newly made life members from Vrindavan. So this was kind of a very elegant presentation. But when we got there, I saw that there was no seat for Srila Prabhupada. There was like a U-shaped sitting arrangement, but no asan for Srila Prabhupada. So I became a little upset, and I started demanding from the person, the Prabhupada should be given a raised asan, that he shouldn't be sitting on the floor like one of us. He wasn't just some caste Goswami, but he was a worldwide acharya who single-handedly was responsible for bringing the message to Lord Chaitanya outside of the boundaries of Bharatvarsa. And I was getting a little excited as I was, making my presentation. So Srila Prabhupada kind of silenced me, but I knew that he was actually pleased that I had taken notice and spoken, but at the same time, with regards to the proper etiquette to the Brijbasis, he pretended that, but it had the effect, because then they brought some small seat, and then Prabhupada was properly situated. Prabhupada actually, on a couple of other occasions, when I kind of acted a little boldly, on the external side, he was showing one, but actually to me, he was laughing about it. One other time, it was a little off the subject, but it was in Delhi, and this really foolish man was challenging Prabhupada during the Pandal program, and then afterwards, he came back after the program, and came back. We had like private quarters for Srila Prabhupada behind the stage, and he came back there, and he started in again. And I remember Giriraj Swami and others tried to like reason with him, and he just wouldn't shut up. And I finally just got so mad, I punched him. And Giriraj told me later, he said he was so happy when I did that. He said, "We all wanted to hit him, but we just couldn't do it." And the man was so surprised. I'm sorry. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was very kind to all, completely filled with affection for anyone who ever stepped forward to further his mission. He would show such affection and appreciation. One time during this visit, during the Kartik Vrat with Srila Prabhupada, and again we were at a small informal house gathering, Jamuna, who was sitting up in the front, she fell asleep. And we were working so hard, in under such situations that were, very... She was staying here at Radha Damodar Temple. She had no privacy. She had to get up very, very, very early in the morning and just find a bucket of water. And, you know, there was no bathrooms as such. You know, just a little gumshoe tie between two sticks. And cooking for Srila Prabhupada, cleaning, taking care of the servants and the sannyasis who were staying with him. So it was natural she'd be a little exhausted. So she fell asleep, and some devotees noticed it. And so they wanted to address the issue. And Srila Prabhupada noticed that, and he said, "No, it is all right. Let her be. She's tired." In a very kind way. Now, we know that during Srimad Bhagavatam class, Srila Prabhupada would tell people, you know, don't sleep, stand up, whatever, you know. But he had such affection for Jamuna, and he knew how hard she was endeavoring to serve him and to assist him, that at this particular moment, when she just fell asleep out of pure exhaustion, he said, "No, that is all right. Let her sleep. She's tired." And he chastised the others. During one of his presentations of Nectar of Devotion, Hayagriva Prabhu arrived on the scene. Well, actually, it was during the Srimad Bhagavatam class. I will tell you the schedule in a moment. We had a kind of a regular routine. But he arrived, and he was dressed in a Western suit. And Srila Prabhupada looked up, and we couldn't tell, because the person's coming from the back and Prabhupada's facing the front. But suddenly his face was radiating obvious pleasure, and he said, "A very distinguished guest has just arrived." And he called him forward, you know. Of course, we just saw Hayagriva. We didn't quite get it, but Hayagriva had done so much to assist Srila Prabhupada in beginning his mission, and in particular in translating and editing of his books, that no matter what Hayagriva would ever do, Prabhupada simply loved him. And then on another occasion, two hippies arrived on the scene. And one hippie had, you know, they both had, like, you know, hippie long hair, but one of the hippies made his obeisances. And Prabhupada looked, he goes, "Oh, such a nice boy." So in this way, Prabhupada was showing affection and appreciation and kindness to all who came forward. On the other hand, he could be very direct in his instructions and very pointed. So as we were all sitting one day, after the Srimad Bhagavatam class, there would be an hour and a half darshan in his quarters after breakfast, so say from 10 to 11:30. So this one boy named Devarshi was sitting there, and he had no shirt on, and he had his beads just wrapped around his neck. Suddenly Prabhupada looked up, and he saw that, and he says, "You go right now to Loy Bazaar," and what happened? "You have no bead bag? You go right now to Loy Bazaar and you purchase a bead bag." Probably one of the few times somebody's been ordered by their spiritual master to go to Loy Bazaar. But he came back, and in a very foolish way, he had his bead bag, and he dangles it in front of Prabhupada, like, "You see, I got one," you know, like, foolishly, really. And Prabhupada looked at him, he says, "And now you chant." one other lesson. He observed that Gurudas was listening to it had just come out, you know, like, mantra rock music, and from the West, a new import from the West. And he was listening to it from also another new thing was smaller tape recorders. So he had these small tape recorders, he was listening to it, and his body was kind of reflecting the rocking part of the mantra. So Prabhupada observed this, you know, usually we're like this or like this, but he was... So Prabhupada was observing this, and he put a stop. He did not appreciate that mood, particularly here in Vrindavan. On two occasions, instead of chanting the Jairada Madhava prayers before beginning the Nectar of Devotion class for the evening, he chanted the Shamsara prayers in an evening rag. So both myself and Ganga Mayi remembered this happening on at least two occasions. And then on another, you know, there was much more trees. So sometimes our friends, the monkeys, would suddenly have a convention right during Prabhupada's class. So one tape, if you listen to the, if they haven't edited it out, if you have one of the old versions, you'll hear suddenly the trees and the noise and the, you know, these monkeys making all their noise. And then you hear the ISKCON ladies, we were kind of usually over that side going, ah! You know? And then you hear Prabhupada, huh! And suddenly it's totally silent, you know. Prabhupada, he was always our hero. And everyone respected him, even the monkeys, even the dogs. Many times we were unable to act properly in a situation. We didn't know how to properly judge the situation, to assess the situation. We were very short on giving respect to senior elderly Vaishnavas or the caste Goswamis because we were so foolishly puffed up with our own, you know, newfound enthusiasm that, you know, we thought maybe we were better than they were, possibly. So when Prabhupada had been moved to the roof about the same time, this kind of an elderly, not ancient, not as old as Prabhupada, but he's older than us, and he was a caste Goswami, and he arrived, and he wanted to spend a few days here. So suddenly the defenders of Srila Prabhupada's mission became very agitated. And it actually got to the point where the man who was, you know, trying to just explain, he just wanted to spend a few days and, you know, he came here every year and he wasn't asking us to leave, you know, but they were definitely asking him to leave. And he couldn't really understand their mood. And because he couldn't understand their mood, he wasn't running away down the stairs like they expected that he should do. So one of the devotees actually pushed the man, and that he could understand. And of course, it was very, very offensive. Somewhere at that point, Srila Prabhupada learned what was going on, and with his expertise, he was able to repair the situation, as he so often had to do with our blenders. And then he instructed that we have to learn. He said, you have to learn how to get along. So he gave that instruction to the devotees. There was two other kind of notable incidents that happened during that time. One was the siege at Keshigat when there was one English boy, and in that same sort of, you know, mentality of that we know the right way to do things, and we're here to correct all your wrongs. So he happened to see something that was wrong, but he didn't know how to deal with it. So he saw somebody beating a cow with a stick. So that was wrong. But his response was to take the stick and beat the guy who was beating the cow. So this, you know, caused quite a response from the local people. So a little while later at Keshigat, I was there alone with my daughter. Chutananda Swami was there, who was, you and Narayani was there. We were just cooking, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, boom, we hear this pounding on the door. And we go up on the roof, you know, at least we knew don't go open the door right away, but we went up on the roof and then we see this contingent of just, you know, they weren't dacoits, they weren't gundas, they were just mad. You know, when people get mad and they get into a group and then the group mentality takes over, you know, rajagun mixed with ignorance, you know, rajagun, tamagun together interacting. And they had a big pole, like a big, huge log, and they're banging the door because we wouldn't open it up. And they were angry, and they were really angry. So we're trying to figure out what to do. And I mean, it was almost a little comical because we kept, you know, she kept making japatis and I saw that the sabjis got made. But I got a little, internally I was feeling a little scared because I had read some books of what happened to the Britishers when the Indians decided, we've had enough of you Brits and we want you out of here, that there were some terrible massacres and women and children were not spared. So I'm thinking, here it is. Death may come at any time, and it looks like now. So I went upstairs and I started putting, I had tealock on, but I started making like very big, noticeable tealock on myself and on my daughter, because I didn't know what else to do. So then we came back down, and we had a little conference, and we decided that the best thing to do is, if they broke the door down, they'd be in, but they'd even be madder. So we decided we'd open the door, and maybe it would cool them a little bit. But we had a plan. When they opened the door, we were going to feed them. We'd finally finish the prasadam. So we would start serving prasadam right away. So in a nutshell, that's what we did. They came and burst in, and we were lined up. We had the pots lined up, and they came in. And, you know, the crowd gets larger and larger when you hear something's going on, you know, just like, it would be nice if that was what happened when you'd hear kirtan, the crowd would get larger and larger, but, you know, so they got larger and larger. They came bursting in, and we're there, ready for them as much as we can be. And I remember this one picture I saw later. You see this little hand with a little ladle. You couldn't even see the person that was attached to the hand, but it was my daughter. She was lined up. We were all lined up, just ready to like serve these people. And there's, you know, not very orderly, but somehow we served them, and somehow or other they just calmed down. And in the back, of course, I'm thinking, oh my God, now what are we going to do? You know, we have, because this was the devotees' prasadam. what are we going to feed the devotees? But by some kind of minor miracle at the time, at any rate, maybe, you know, there was enough left over for the rest of the devotees. The daily schedule, as I remember it, and she has a clearer mind than I'll ever have, so she can correct all the mistakes I've made. But it was, you see, in the beginning, actually, what happened when we first started coming, there wasn't like an organized program. We hadn't sat down and made plans. You know, there wasn't a monitor. There wasn't a bus leader. There weren't any buses. There wasn't anything. We just, devotees started coming. And then after a couple of days, it was like, well, we want to have Mangal Arati. And the Mangal Arati here is like about 5 or 10 minutes banging on a gong. There's no, you don't even, you know, even a kirtan wouldn't have really like surpassed the sound of the ringing of the gong. And we wanted to sing the Shamsara prayers. And we wanted to have some kirtan. So we kind of, you know, put that together. And it was either in Prabhupada's room and then up on the roof. I think, you know, as it got bigger, we got it up on the roof. So we would come from Keshigat, get over here and sing the Shamsara prayers and have some kirtan, and then there would be a Srimad Bhagavatam class. When Prabhupada arrived, then the Bhagavatam class was moved out here. And then when Prabhupada was here, there was, after breakfast, there would be a darshan. So usually about 10 o'clock, 10 to 11:30, about an hour and a half, and then he'd have his massage, his bath, his lunch. And the nectar of devotion was approximately from 5 to 7, if I remember it. And then there would be the final evening darshan in Srila Prabhupada's room. And it was very open. Any devotee who was here was allowed to go and sit in on these darshans. And I'll just close with a personal interaction that I had with Srila Prabhupada at this time. It was during the discourses themselves. As I said, quite often the light went off, or it would get dimmer and dimmer. So it wasn't well lit here. And although we had cleaned it as much as we could, a lot of rubble, just like now there's rubble back there. There's some pieces of stone and some pieces of bamboo and this and that. So Prabhupada would get up to walk through the archway to go to his rooms. And the kirtan would often still be going on. So the first night, I know he got up and I saw he kind of hesitated. And I could see, he couldn't see very, very well. So I jumped up nobody else was moving, so I jumped up and I went over and I put my arm out. And he very lightly put his hand on my arm, and I walked him over to the door. And then he could manage because there was solid ground. So every night, nobody seemed to notice that. You know, I was expecting, well, the next night, one of the brahmacharis, the men, they would, respond. But somehow or other, it didn't happen. So for several nights, this was my good fortune to be able to use my arm as a sort of a place for Srila Prabhupada to rest his lotus hands so he would be able to walk securely. So his mercy was always there for all of us, and I don't think any of us ever felt in his presence bereft of his mercy. We didn't feel the separation between the men and the women. The separation came when Prabhupada would leave. That was the separation that we would feel. But when he was present, simply to be in his presence filled everyone with such great joy that we were always perfectly satisfied. One devotee remarked to me one time that they would be waiting for Prabhupada, and perhaps there had been some difficulties or even a crisis at a center. So they're just waiting. Prabhupada's coming. We'll talk to him. We'll tell him about it. And then Prabhupada would arrive, and he'd say, "Is everything all right?" And the devotees would just say, "Jai Srila Prabhupada." And they realized, yes, everything was all right. And they couldn't think of anything to say except "Jai Srila Prabhupada." So I can't think of anything more to say except "Jai Srila Prabhupada."
Jai!